Well, can we go to the next verse because it has a purport? There we go. Okay. So we're going to, in the next half hour or so, quickly cover these next two verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 56, and then speak on Bhakti Siddhanta. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I think I'll just chant it twice, so listen carefully because we're not going to have everybody chant it again because of time. Dine dine svarna bharan. Ashtau sastrijati prabho. Durbhiksha marya rishtani. Sarpadi vyadhyo shubhaha. Nasanti maryanas tatra. Yatraste vyachito manihi. Translation. Each day the gem would produce 8 bharas of gold, my dear Prabhu, and the place in which it was kept and properly worshipped would be free of calamities such as famine or untimely death, and also of evils like snake bites, mental and physical disorders, and the presence of deceitful persons. I was reading this verse, I was thinking, Radhajivan, we should find a Shamantaka jewel for you and we'll be all set. And the purport reads, Srila Sridhar Swami gives the following Shastric reference concerning the Bhara. I'll skip the Sanskrit. 4 rice grains are called 1 gunja, 5 gunjas, 1 panna, 8 pannas, 1 karsha, 4 karshas, 1 pala, 100 palas, 1 tula, 20 tulas makes up 1 bhara, unquote. Since there are about 3,700 grains of rice in an ounce, the Shamantaka jewel was producing approximately 170 pounds of gold every day. Let's see, how quickly can we build the TOVP with this? Text 10, there's no purport. We finished with 9 yesterday. King Satrajit entered his opulent home, festively executing auspicious rituals. He had qualified brahmanas install the Shamantaka jewel in the house's temple room. And then 8 bars of gold, plus all these nice things. Protection from calamities. Yesterday, just very briefly, yesterday we discussed the fruitive intention of his worship, and therefore he worshiped the proper for someone with fruitive intention. According to Vedic injunction, he worshiped the sun god, and he was an ardent worshiper. He although he was a king, hours every day he would offer various articles and chant appropriate mantras, and he was really intent on getting what he wanted. I mean, pleasing the sun god, but also getting what he wanted. And the sun god indicated, I know what you want. Here it is. You please me very much. Through that worship, not only he got what he wanted, but he didn't get his heart cleansed. So, as a result, pride. And it's kind of like, well, when there's pride, there's a wonderful section in Narada's reflection on Nalakuvera and Marigriva when he saw them in that disgraceful condition that was, by culture, besides the behavior was despicable, they were shameless. And before Narada, no shame. It's a wonderful section. We get to hear in that section Narada's contemplation on how to help someone. Really fantastic. And so he considers the root, not the behavior. He wasn't offended. He didn't take offense by the behavior. He was compassionately considering, where is this behavior coming from? And he understood right away, it's coming from pride. Pride in this and pride in that. I'm the son of Kuvera, the treasure of heaven. We are these, you know, special people. And our father is very dear devotee of Lord Shiva, so we have the favor of Lord Shiva, so we're very special people. You know, they're fabulous wealth, so we're very special people. So pride was in their heart. And because he then considers what happens when pride is in the heart. He goes into this detailed analysis, and the commentary is similarly very detailed. Not only pride makes the heart hard, but Narada considers when the heart is very hard, one can do any cruel thing and not think a thing about it, because I'm this important person with this credential, that credential, and other people exist at my pleasure and at my expense. So Prabhupada specifically speaks about animal cruelty. He attributes in that commentary, the animal cruelty comes from pride. That's a whole topic. I once had this experience traveling. Just quickly, it's with Southwest Airlines. I travel with Southwest for a number of reasons, but you know, you don't pick your seat. I mean, you're not assigned a seat; you just sit. So I like aisle seats. And then it was during a vacation time for college students, and it was from New York heading for Chicago, and a Columbia University student sat next to me. And generally, one of the nice things about being a Hare Krishna devotee is generally people don't like to sit next to you. So you get a vacant seat. If there's any vacant seats, that's the last one to go. But this young student sat right next to me, and I thought, okay, they want to convert me or something or other. That's one of the other things that happens. But in this case, it was a Bible reading college student, very sincere young college student, and then they were, you know, submissively inquiring. So we went into this whole discussion about, you know, the distinction, you know, compare and contrast, likenesses and differences. And, you know, very sincere question and a very sincere, like, thoughtful reply about to be a real Christian, you know, the thing that Prabhupada would say, thou shalt not kill. And it was fascinating. You know, Columbia University, Ivy League intelligence, and the Bible in her hand. And, you know, quoting in this section, that section, the other section, with a rationalized, it's okay. It was fascinating. As you know, the point of agreement was the real purpose of being a Christian is to please Christ. So supposing Christ had a lamb in his arms, and you said to Christ, is it okay if I take the lamb from your arms and cut the throat of the lamb and eat the lamb? Would Christ smile or not? And then she, you know, pulled this thing from somewhere in the St. Matthew, and somebody saying, you know, it really doesn't matter. You can't limit someone's being Christian by their conduct. I said, it's not about conduct. It's about simply, it's pleasing. So anyway, it was interesting. And from Narada Muni's analysis, where does that come from? You know, at least in that section, it's the root of it is pride. So where there's pride, unbecoming behavior, even for a very thoughtful, sincere, etc., you know, religious, good person, it can come. And so we already heard he as three things. Satrajit entering Dwarka, so filled with himself that he knew who Krishna was, but he didn't pay respects to Krishna, just prancing through Dwarka with his Shamataka jewel, look at me. And then this verse number 10 is he had the Shamataka jewel installed, and he invited many people to participate in this nice function of installing the Shamataka jewel, but he neglected to invite Krishna to participate. Strike two. And then comes, you know, tomorrow's verse is strike three. Krishna went to Satrajit. He didn't ask for it, the Shamataka jewel for himself. He asked for him to give it to King Ugrasena. Strike three. It was no. Because he was too attached, you know, to the eight bars of gold and to the prestige and everything that would give to him instead of following the instruction of Krishna. So, you know, it was an offense, all three of them, and it led to a reaction. And then it didn't stop there. You know, the rest of the story is after Prasena was killed, he started a rumor. Well, I mean, this, you know the story. Psst, psst. Even Krishna was subject to that. So any of you in this room who have been subject to that, you're in good company. Even Krishna in Dwarka. And it happened again after some time, because the verse that we just read, when disease, when there were irregularities of weather and those kinds of things, it was another rumor. That's the next chapter, where this happened because Akura had left, and there's this whole story of how Akura's father, Shwapalka, had this benediction that he could relieve a place from irregularities of weather and regular weather and production of rain, and because of Krishna, we're now having irregular weather. Well, who's going to blame Krishna today about the irregular weather of Florida? They did that in Dwarka. So it's very valuable to study how Krishna responded, because why is this happening? Krishna wants to teach us something. So when you go through the section, consider it carefully. What's the lesson? How do we practically apply this wonderful example of when somebody starts the thing, you know, the spreading some false rumor about somebody or maybe even you, what do you do? So we can tolerate, but Krishna more than tolerated, he took some action. Let's see what the verses say, what Krishna did. So the 8 bars of gold and the calamities were held at a distance. That's both of those are material. We should not aspire for those things from devotional service, because if we do, that's not following Rupa Goswami's instructions. It's not what pure devotional service is. Those things may come, they may not come. Whatever Krishna sends our way, that's fine. We want to serve him. We don't want our attention to go anywhere from the position of serving him. We'd be happy to have some nice weather in the world, but the most important thing is the pure devotion for the personality of Godhead. That's the Bhagavatam's teaching. So, glorification and appreciation of Bhakti Siddhanta on his disappearance day. Three things. One is just start with some little personal appreciation that I have for Bhakti Siddhanta, like triple. When I was a college student, I received my first Krishna conscious literature from a fellow student, Burijan Prabhu. You know, from that university, about something like 30 devotees came from that one university. And he was one. I didn't know anything about Krishna consciousness, I just knew him. And for some reason, he gave me a Back to Godhead magazine. I didn't know what Back to Godhead magazine was, but I had some appreciation from Burijan. And so I was carrying it around, you know, my clipboard, and then on top of the clipboard was the Back to Godhead magazine, and then my books. And then one time, some people saw me, you know, saw the magazine, and they pointed to the magazine and said, "You're into that?" And I said, "What's that?" They said, "Oh, you don't want to read that." So they're saying, "You don't want to read that," perked my curiosity, so I read it. And the Back to Godhead magazines at that time were mimeograph machines stapled together. That was the Back to Godhead magazine. And the lead article was an article by Bhakti Siddhanta. And the title of the article was "The Bhagavad, Its Ontology and Morphology." So I got out my dictionary and tried to understand what the title meant. And I was intrigued, so I read the whole article. And I was a pre-med student, and I wasn't intimidated at all by technical things. Nor was I, like, you know, wowed by it either. So I just read the article and got my dictionary and, you know, did what students do, underlined things and looked up words and circled words and the meanings and tried to piece it all together. And 3 hours later, the time just went, whew. 3 hours later, it was over. I read the article. And I was amazed at two things. You know, all that time flew and I wasn't even noticing it. You know, when you're really absorbed in something, time just, you don't even notice it. And then another thing was, my consciousness was way up there. I had never had with medical studies, was my consciousness way up there. There was something about Bhakti Siddhanta. So from that, before I even, you know, knew what Krishna consciousness was, I had this very special appreciation for Bhakti Siddhanta. And there were a number of other things that happened without detailing, but just in my heart, there's a special place for Bhaktisiddhanta. And there's other things that happened. Somehow it was orchestrated like that. Well, I'll say another one. So I, you know, became a devotee, living in the Boston temple. And Guru Das came from India, and, you know, I didn't know who he was, but he was an impressive figure. And he was carrying a bunch of books, and I liked books, so I asked him, can I look at your books? Sure. And the first book was a book by Bhaktisiddhanta, so I was going, whoa, Bhaktisiddhanta, a hero. And I opened up the book, and just reading the preface, I practically hit the floor, because he said like this, this is like not even the book, just like the preface of the book. A Vaishnava never finds fault in others, for by so doing, he is indicating that his own heart is honeycombed with the very same faults. Paragraph. Rather, a Vaishnava is one who looks within and sees where there is need for self-improvement. He didn't use that word, but whatever the word. Cleansing of the heart and self-improvement, because that is the life of a Vaishnava. And that was like, you know, 2 weeks of living in the Hare Krishna temple that happened. And that, obviously, it's still with me, that the powerful messages of Bhaktisiddhanta have a way of sticking. Because it's coming from a transcendental place. Unquestionably, not just the words, but the consciousness of the deliverer. Oh. I'm happy to speak about Bhaktisiddhanta. Now you have some idea of, like, my special appreciation for him. One of the phrases that Prabhupada used in describing Bhaktisiddhanta, what can I say? He was a Vaikuntha man. From directly, according to the prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was feeling himself inadequate to properly carry out the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although he certainly had this unlimited, expansive vision and did in fact act on it. But he so much desired that the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would move forward, and so he prayed, the pure devotee prayed for a ray of Vishnu to descend, and a ray of Vishnu descended as his son, confirmed by a number of things, the umbilical cord wrapped around his shoulder like a Brahmin thread, and the garland falling from Lord Jagannath, just circling around his body when his mother, Bhagavati Devi, was placing the child before Lord Jagannath during the Rath Yatra, when the cart was stopped right in front of their home at the Rath Yatra procession, Jagannath paying his appreciation and respect to Bhaktisiddhanta. So, from that time, Bhaktisiddhanta, Bhaktivinoda Thakur understood, this is the fulfillment of my prayer. And sure enough, throughout his life, Bhaktisiddhanta exhibited Vaikuntha-like or transcendental characteristics. One of the favorite things about, well, so many favorite things, but one of them is when he was just 7 years old, he had memorized Bhagavad Gita. Now we know children, I mean, parents like to train their children to recite slokas. That's natural. But ask the child, what's the meaning? They shrug their shoulders. I don't know. But Bhaktisiddhanta not only could recite the entire Bhagavad Gita at 7 years old. Think of a child, you know, that's 7 years old. But he could speak for 10 minutes at least on any verse of Bhagavad Gita at 7 years old. When he was 11 years old, his father took him on a tour of temples in South India, 11 years old. Later in his life, he wrote a book on the holy places of South India. And the intellectuals of the time acclaimed that this book would normally take a team of dozens of very qualified scholars, practically a lifetime, to compose. And this was from visiting temples in South India when he was 11 years old. And in that same year, at 11 years old, he invented a system of shorthand for taking notes. And by canto, he gave a name for it. When he was just a teenager, like, you know, there's some teenagers around here. When he was just a teenager, he was given the title Siddhanta Saraswati by his tutors because he was studying special Sanskrit and astronomy, and he was so brilliant that they gave him this title. He had a didactic memory that whatever he would read once, he would perfectly remember. It's said about him that when, for some period of time, he left college early because he understood what happens in India, at least, after you finish college. There's some expectations, like get married, get a job and get married. So he didn't even finish. He took rather posts, different types of services for the kings of Tripura. And one of the things that he did is he looked after their library, and one of the things he did was he read everything in the library. And then later on, he would verbatim quote something from Chaucer or Emerson or whatever that he had read when he was, you know, in his 20s. Later as a traveling sannyasi. I mean, you know, you read something, maybe you really like that something and you try to remember it and, you know, some number of years later, can you remember? Transcendental brain. It said when he was still a teenager finishing his studies, he never did his homework because instead he would hear from his father and study the teachings of Rupa Goswami and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and the writings of and songs of Narottam Das Thakur. That's what he would do at home. But then when he had his exams in school, he would always get perfect scores in school. With his father created this Vishva Vaishnava Raja Sabha, which then later Prabhupada named as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Bhaktisiddhanta described, so his father conducted those meetings where they would discuss Vaishnava topics. And of course, his number one student in the audience was his son. Brilliant! And this Vishva Vaishnava Raja Sabha, Bhaktisiddhanta said, it's like a river that's always there, and sometimes the river may go underground and you cannot see it, but it's always there. And there's a way to make it come to the surface, and that's by Harikatha. So when one creates this atmosphere of Harikatha, then the Vishva Vaishnava Raja Sabha becomes manifest. It's you know, it's preaching Krishna consciousness, and those people throughout the world, or in every town and village, or wherever there's spirit souls in the human body, they can become Vaishnavas just by Harikatha and chanting and preaching and giving discourse. That was his life and soul. At the same time, he had this penchant or inclination as a young person for understanding one of the topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the configuration of the planets. So he was really, really skilled in astronomy. One time, he was holding some position. A professor at the University of Calcutta held a different position. So it was arranged that they would have a debate in another professor's home. He's like a teenager having a debate with a professor of astronomy. You know, and one can only imagine a little proud. So he so soundly, it's in his biography, so soundly defeated the man. He was totally humiliated. He lost control of his body and he, well, passed stool in his pants. and shame, it shamed, he had to leave. So, but not that Bhaktisiddhanta was interested in intimidating people with his, he was an intellectual bully. He just wanted, he was very fastidious about speaking what is truth and what is accurate. He wasn't compromising. Sometimes it's said that he would have disagreement with his father, although he had enormous transcendental respect for his father. Their approach was different. Like, you know, sometimes may happen in our Sangha of Vaishnavas today. Bhaktisiddhanta's approach was insist on, you know, fidelity with teachings. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur was the art of humble persuasion. Of course, different personality, different circumstance, different empowerment from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they would sometimes disagree. Like this famous circumstance when at the age of 33, there was a very famous, even today, you know, at the Samadhi of Haridas Thakur in Puri, there was a Babaji, Radha Raman Charanar, that's Babaji. Very popular, very, very, very popular, many, many, many followers. 33-year-old Bhaktisiddhanta challenged him and regularly spoke stridently against two things. One was an invented mantra, Rasa Bhasa mantra, that was very popular instead of the Maha mantra. I don't know if any of you have come across it, but in the course of my travels, I've been to like home gatherings where people are still chanting that mantra without repeating it. And I had no idea where that came from. Then I learned later where it came from. This man was very powerful, very popular. And so when Bhaktisiddhanta challenged him, this is a bogus mantra. And then this other practice, Saki Beki, he had one of his chief disciples dressed as a Lalita, you know, practice warm-up to become a gopi. And Bhaktisiddhanta challenged him. It created an uproar in Puri because, you know, people like this man and Bhaktisiddhanta, young brahmachari, confronting him. So Bhaktisiddhanta was advised by his father, I think you should just go to Mayapur and chant Hare Krishna. So he went to Mayapur and took this vow of 1 billion names. And, you know, and the math comes out. He would chant the same number of rounds as Haridas Thakur did, 3 lakhs of names, every day for 9 years. I mean, try chanting, you know, 64 rounds one day. I know somebody that was in Vrindavan for Kartik, and they were chanting 64 rounds a day, and that's nice, and that was a challenge. How do you even just mathematically chant 3 times 64 rounds a day? It takes 24 hours if you chant at the same pace that, you know, in 16 rounds takes 2 hours. The math comes, it's 24 hours. And to do that every day, for 9 years. He demonstrated he was on another platform, the Haridas Thakur platform. No need for anything of this world. And yet when he was instructed by Gaurakishore Das Babaji and Bhaktivinoda Thakur to take the message of Lord Chaitanya and go and preach, he left that qualification of a Babaji, which, you know, by the way, that means beyond, as Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami were beyond the regulations of Varna and Ashram, because those regulations of Varna and Ashram for those of us that need to become free from our conditioning and contamination. He already demonstrated he was beyond that. And yet, he accepted sannyas for its real purpose, which is for preaching. And so he left that activity to preach. So here's this powerful preacher with, you know, transcendental brain and language to go with it, traveling throughout the land. And what it must have been like, if only they had digital recording capacity during that time, we could watch videos of Bhaktisiddhanta speaking. We're so fortunate that we have those of Prabhupada, and the world for the future will similarly have. If we could have had that from Bhaktisiddhanta, amazing. And second part of this little is presentation or appreciation of Bhaktisiddhanta, especially through the association I've had in the past several months with Rabindra Swarup Prabhu. We conducted a seminar together in Gitanagari. So it wasn't just like, you know, his explaining the Founder Acharya booklet, but it's just like oozing from Rabindra Swarup Prabhu, his profound appreciation. I think of it as like he's carrying a special shakti. In fact, I told him, Rabindra, you're carrying a potency that's beyond just you. It's like the special potency of deep, deep appreciation of how Srila Prabhupada was the perfect follower of Bhaktisiddhanta. Everything, and he's got it down because he spent so long examining the Founder Acharya term. Where did it come from? And everything that Prabhupada did was in pursuit of fulfilling the vision of Bhaktisiddhanta. Their style wasn't exactly like. Prabhupada wasn't the confrontational style, although certainly he did that in certain circumstances. But Prabhupada was so kind. Remember hearing Prabhupada say, I'm something like 80% more liberal than my Guru Maharaj. Some word like that, liberal or accepting. Prabhupada was drawing the hearts and the minds of the uncivilized Western world toward Krishna. Practically speaking, necessary. And Bhaktisiddhanta's approach was different, but rather each of the things that he did, and especially making note of the organization, the structure of the organization that Bhaktisiddhanta wanted, that Prabhupada saw, it wasn't followed, and therefore, as a result, the Gaudiya Math imploded. at least, you know, the dynamic of it imploded. There are still temples with persons in charge of those temples, but not thinking beyond that. So that element that was missing was this group of governing personalities that would oversee his mission. We all know that history. And just it to hear Rabindra, I can't do it properly. I can't do it like Rabindra can do, who does it properly. But, the, you know, not this isn't the only thing that Prabhupada did, but it's something that as faithful followers of Srila Prabhupada, who is the faithful follower of Bhakti Siddhanta, how important it is to preserve that element of Prabhupada's mission, which Bhakti Siddhanta's followers didn't preserve. And part of the failure to preserve it was their pride. They were so scholarly and so brilliant and so, in their own way, gifted. But like we were discussing last night, if one is gifted with something and doesn't recognize where it came from and therefore in whose service it should be utilized, it can make havoc. Or at least, you know, the purpose of the disciplic succession will be missed. Something will be there, and something very significant will be missing. So the third part, just looking at the clock, it's 7 minutes after nine. I just, as Mukhi did, I'd like to read just some of the concluding messages, like little bullet point messages from Bhakti Siddhanta. In that section in this biography called The Final Days. Look within yourself. Look within, amend yourself, rather than pry into the frailties of others. Similar is that message that I saw as a young bhakta. In this world of Maya, averse to the Lord, full of trials and tribulations, only patience, humility, and respect for others are our friends for Hari Bhajan. The Lord, Gaurasundar, puts his devotees in various difficulties and associations to test their patience and strength of mind. Success depends on their good fortune. When faults in others misguide and delude you, have patience, introspect, find faults in yourself. Know that others cannot harm you unless you harm yourself. I wish that every selfless, tender-hearted person of Gaudiya Math will be prepared to shed 200 gallons of blood for the nourishment of the spiritual corpus of every individual of this world. O mind, this is quoting Raghunath Das. He spoke on Manashiksha of Raghunath Das extensively. In this world, we do not have any attachment or aversion towards anybody. All the arrangements of this world are momentary. That spiritual desideratum is indispensably necessary for every single person. May all of you, with one aim and a single voice, attain the right of serving the original Ashraya Vigraha. May the flow of thought of Sri Rupa's followers stream over the world may we never, in any condition whatsoever, show aversion to the sacrifice of chanting the seven-tongued Sankirtan of Sri Krishna. If there is ever-increasing attachment for this, perfection on all sides will be achieved. May all of you, by the earnest pursuance of Sri Rupa's followers, preach the words of Sri Rupa Raghunath in a fearless voice with supreme enthusiasm. Many other wonderful inspirational teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta. So we're honoring him on his disappearance day. And I think we'll end there. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai. Any comments, questions, or if somebody want to add something? Yes.
That was a very nice story. Ramgopi Prabhu, a disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sutagur. I met him also in 79, very old, in Chaitanya Math. We used to go from Ishkan. Every day we would walk there after Mangal Arati. And he was a follower of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. He was initiated for about 6-7 years. In 1921, he joined. And then he left because of his wife pulling him out from the temple. And then some or other, the bad association, he deviated from the spiritual path completely. Not even was aware that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur departed in 1937 and completely abandoned all the association of any Gauri. And after 27 years, he passed away. And the day he used to live is in a state called Assam. You know where Assam is. Okay, next to Bengal. And then when he passed away, his eldest son used to work in Guwahati from his house, which is about 12 hours by train and rickshaws and all this transportation. So when he left his body, his wife sent a message for his eldest son to come because the eldest son has to
perform the
fire. Yes. Yeah. So by the time he went and came back, it was 24 hours. So, and then he was lying down on this wooden pyre. And as soon as the son, eldest son came, he remembered his father mentioned little bit about his early life as a follower of Bhaktisiddhanta Sutagur. Some or other, because of separation from his father, he didn't see. He started crying, "Father, I wish I could see you, and you just left, and I'm putting fire now, I'm burning you, cremating your body." And he cried out a little bit, and all of a sudden he saw his father just move the wood and just came out. And he told his son, "Take me to Guwahati temple, Gaudiya temple. I don't want to go home or anything." And he went straight 12 hours from there, his father, his son took him. I don't know how long it took because he was in a dead body for 24 hours. So then when he came in the Guwahati temple, then he started outburst crying. And after a few days, he was sick for a while. And then after a few days, he spoke out. And he spoke out to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur in the altar and he cried and cried. "Oh, Prabhupada, I was in a queue in front of this judgment of Jamaraj. And I never heard or saw. I heard about him, but I never saw or could imagine. I was so frightened. I was so covered by the ignorance, such an offensive nature I had that I did not even realize that I was your follower until a moment came when my position was called to be judged. Jamaraj got down from his chair and he came down and he said, 'Who is Prabhupada?' That woke me up. 'Oh, Prabhupada!' Then I remember everything and he started crying. He could not speak. And then he says, 'I was so fortunate that even the demigod, the Jamaraj, he knows you so much, but I forgot. Please forgive me.' The rest of his life he stayed there and chanted, and then he departed later in the 80s.
Wow. Hare Krishna. Ragatmika.
Is it correct to conclude then that the disciplic succession is not flowing through what we see today as the Gaudiya Math? You know, that actually if it weren't for Prabhupada, it would have terminated there.
Well, I'm not sure what you're asking, but certainly if one adheres to his teachings, that the fullness of what he wanted would be there. Now, it's not like there's nothing, but the fullness of what he wanted is not there. He wanted something, as we just read. So one may take some instructions and not all instructions. It's not like, therefore, the disciplic succession is broken. Certainly, something is there. But the fullness of what he wanted to give is not there. And that's unfortunate. Yes, please.
Hare Krishna. Adi Bignan, you spoke about pride and the dangers of it. Can you give us some ways to curb it quickly? I don't know if that seems to be a very difficult thing to get rid of, pride. But
it's pervasive. And quick ways to get rid of it. Well, something that I firmly believe in is in Krishna consciousness, there's no substitute for purity. And, the price for purity isn't quick. The price for purity is, scrub. We need to very faithfully and consistently and in a sustained way take up those activities that are cleansing and stay with it and stay with it and stay with it, because purity isn't cheap. And similarly, becoming free from pride is, I don't know, a quick method. I guess, smash. Krishna pulls out the sledgehammer and smashes you. Oh. My pride is gone. Maybe that's a quick way. Pray to Krishna, maybe he'll smash you. Yes, last.
Yeah, you mentioned that he debated with a professor who passed his stool.
Yeah.
Would you allow me to...
elaborate?
Yes. He was not a teenager at that time. He was 27 years old. He was born in 1874.
23. Anyway,
yeah, he was born in 1874, and this was in January 2nd, 1902. So he was 27 years old.
Okay.
And upon the request of his students of astronomy, he had retired from astronomy. But they were disappointed with things that they were hearing at the college. So they requested him to go and debate with a student of a professor. The professor's name was called Bapudeva.
Yeah.
He was an elderly man. So he was debating with his topmost student. And the professor was in the audience, but was not debating with him.
Oh.
So he completely, it says here, Sri Siddhanta Sarasvati's superior learning and powerful elocution left that scholar so completely trounced that Sri Bapudeva Shastri, his theories and reputation have been shredded, involuntarily passed his stool and urine in the assembly.
Somehow I had the okay, I'll think. When
this is from the Shibhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava.
Okay. Yeah. I was reading from, it didn't give the his age, but it mentions in Bhurijan's, in Rupa Vilasa's books, The Ray of Vishnu, when he was 23, he was offered the post of the chairman of the astronomy department of the University of Calcutta, and declined.
Yeah, here it gives the date. It says that it was on January 2nd, 1902 in Calcutta with Raya Bahadur Rajendra Chandra Shastri, president of the Royal Society, as the chairman.
He was hosting the debate.
Yeah.
And the judge of the debate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 1902 makes it, he was 27 years old.
Okay. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada Ki.